A Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to The Deep Dive. Today we are really diving into the deep end of philosophy. We're tackling a book that's, well, let's say it has a reputation.
That it does. Infamous for its difficulty, but absolutely legendary for its impact.
Exactly. Georg Wilhelm Friedrich Hegel's The Phenomenology of Spirit, first published way back in 1807.
A true cornerstone of Western thought. And, you know, while it definitely intimidates people, understandably, the core ideas inside are just incredibly relevant for how we understand ourselves. Conflict, history.
And pretty much everything. So Our mission today for you listening is to try and cut through some of that notorious complexity.
Right, to unlock the central argument, make it accessible.
So for listeners, maybe you're familiar with the name Hegel, but who've maybe wisely never cracked open this particular book.
Uh-huh.
What's the big idea? What should we hold on to?
Okay, the absolute core concept is this. Human consciousness isn't some fixed, static thing. It's dynamic. It's historical. It's basically on this epic journey. Think of it like a massive philosophical road trip.
Ah, I like that. A road trip towards what?
Towards complete self-knowledge and ultimately freedom. Hegel has this fundamental belief that reality itself is rational, and he calls this underlying rational reality Geist.
Which usually gets translated as spirit or sometimes mind.
Exactly, spirit or mind. So the book is essentially tracing the development, the sort of unfolding story of this universal mind, the spirit, as it learns about itself through history. It's like its autobiography.
An autobiography of the universal mind. Wow.
Okay, and it's all driven by this one huge question. How does consciousness actually arrive at certain absolute knowledge? How does it know that it knows?
And why does that still matter so much to us now?
Oh, the relevance is immense. Hegel's whole framework, his way of thinking about dialectics and progress, underpins so much of how we think about culture, social change, justice movements, even just individual identity. It's all tied into this grand unfolding of spirit trying to understand itself.
That definitely sets a grand stage. Okay, let's talk about the man behind it all. Georg Wilhelm Friedrich Hegel, born 1770, died 1831, a key figure in German idealism.
Yeah, Hegel was, well, he was ambitious, a real synthesizer. He wanted to build this single, comprehensive philosophical system that could explain everything, logic, nature, ethics, art, history, a whole lot.
He wasn't thinking small.
Not at all. He was aiming for the total picture, the whole truth, unified.
And the timing of when he wrote this book, The Phenomenology, is really important, isn't it? 1807.
Absolutely crucial. Right. I mean, the story goes, he finished the manuscript basically as Napoleon's troops were marching into Jena, where he was.
Wow. Talk about context.
Right. So for Hegel, the French Revolution, the rise of Napoleon, these weren't just news events. They were world historical moments. They were proof, in a way.
Proof of what?
Proof that these abstract ideas, freedom, reason, weren't just theories. They were actual forces shaping history, playing out dramatically, sometimes violently, right there on the world stage. He saw history as the process of spirit becoming real, becoming concrete.
And this connects to his big disagreement with Kant, his predecessor.
Yeah, very much so. Kant had famously argued that ultimate reality, what he called the thing in itself, was fundamentally unknowable to us. Our minds structure experience, but we can't access the raw reality behind it.
But Hegel wasn't having that.
No, he completely rejected that limitation. Hegel's core conviction was that reason can grasp reality, precisely because reality itself is rational. They're made of the same stuff, so to speak.
Okay.
And the phenomenology was his big foundational argument to show how, to demonstrate step by painful step that the mind is capable of achieving this comprehensive, systematic understanding of everything.
Right. So the book itself, its main purpose is this science of the experience of consciousness.
Ah.
It traces how consciousness evolves, right?
Mm-hmm.
From the most basic awareness up to the highest level of self-understanding.
Exactly. Think of consciousness as the protagonist in this epic philosophical coming-of-age story. It starts out naive and learns through experience.
And the engine driving that learning, that evolution, is the dialectic. Thesis, antithesis, synthesis.
That's the famous trio. But maybe think of it more like this. Every stage, every shape of consciousness, as Hegel calls it, initially presents itself as the whole truth. This is it. I get it now.
Mm-hmm.
But then, when consciousness tries to live by that truth, it discovers an internal contradiction, some kind of flaw or incompleteness within that viewpoint.
And that contradiction forces it to change.
Precisely. It forces it to move on, to develop a new, more complex perspective that tries to resolve the previous contradiction.
And this isn't just throwing out the old idea, right? It's that key term, Aufhebung.
Yes, Aufhebung, sublation. It's a brilliant concept. It means simultaneously to cancel something, but also to preserve what was valuable in it and to lift it up into a higher, richer understanding.
Like revising a draft of something you wrote.
That's a great analogy. You cancel the old draft, sure, but you keep the good bits, the core insights, and integrate them into the new, better version. So, for Hegel, conflict, contradiction, even failure, they aren't mistakes to be avoided. They are the necessary fuel for philosophical growth.
It's pretty mind-bending that this whole process starts with something incredibly basic, just trying to know an object in front of you, and ends up explaining, like, world history.
The scope is just vast. It really is. We start with basic knowing epistemology. How does the mind relate to the external world? Then it gets more complex.
Right. It moves into a self-consciousness, how we understand ourselves in relation to others, social identity.
Then it expands further into reason, how we try to impose order on the world through science, through ethics, and then even broader into spirit, Geist, collective consciousness, culture, history.
Including things like the French Revolution we mentioned.
Exactly. And it finally culminates in exploring religion, art, and ultimately, absolute church. Knowing which for Hegel is philosophy itself comprehending the whole journey.
Okay, let's walk through a few key stages of that journey. Starting right at the beginning. Sense certainty, the most basic claim to knowledge.
Yeah, the most apparently simple and direct. Consciousness starts thinking, okay, the most certain knowledge I have is just this immediate sensation. What's right here, right now?
Like, I know this coffee cup here on my desk now. Seems pretty solid.
It does seem solid. But Hegel, brilliantly, shows it falls apart the moment you try to actually say it or even think it clearly.
How so? If I say this cup?
Because the words you use, this, here, now, are inherently universal concepts. This can refer to literally anything. Here could be your desk, this room, the city. Now is fleeting and instantly becomes then.
Okay. The language itself betrays the supposed uniqueness of the experience.
Exactly. The very act of trying to capture the specific, immediate sensory truth reveals that all you've grasped is an empty universal. The certainty evaporates. It was an illusion.
So consciousness learns that the truth isn't just in the raw sensation, but maybe in the concepts or properties. This leads it through stages like perception and understanding. What's the key takeaway there before we get to the self?
Well, after sense certainty fails, consciousness tries other strategies. It tries grouping properties together, perception, or looking for underlying scientific laws, understanding, gravity, forces, things you can't directly see.
Trying to find stable rules.
Right. But eventually it realizes something profound. Those laws, those organizing principles, they aren't in the objects themselves. They're constructions of the mind. The mind itself is imposing that order.
Okay, so the focus shifts inwards.
That's the huge pivot, the realization that the source of certainty and order might actually lie within the subject, within consciousness itself. And that shift leads directly to the next major stage, self-consciousness.
And this is where things get really interesting, socially speaking. Because once consciousness focuses on itself, it encounters a big problem.
Mm.
It needs validation, right? It needs recognition from others.
Precisely. This is central for Hegel. You can't just declare yourself a self-conscious being in isolation. Your sense of self requires confirmation from another self-consciousness.
And that need for recognition leads to conflict.
It leads, Hegel argues, to a fundamental struggle, a life and death battle for recognition. Because to be truly recognized as a self, you have to show you value that selfhood more than mere biological life.
Which brings us to the absolutely classic master-slave dialectic.
Indeed. In the struggle, one consciousness risks death to assert its independence, that's the master. The other, fearing death, submits and chooses life over that abstract freedom that's the slave.
The master wins the struggle, gets recognition. But you said earlier there's a paradox here. His victory is kind of hollow.
Completely hollow. That's the genius of it. First, the recognition he receives is from someone he now views as inferior, as not fully human, as just a thing, the slave. So recognition from a non-equal is essentially worthless for confirming his own status as an equal.
Right.
And second, the master becomes totally dependent on the slave. The slave does all the actual work, mediating the master's relationship with the physical world. The master just consumes. He becomes passive, reliant.
Well, the slave, ironically, through being forced to work.
Through that labor, the slave actively transforms the material world. They impose their ideas onto nature, shape things according to a plan. In doing so, they see their own consciousness made real, objective, out there in the things they create.
So they achieve a more genuine self-awareness through that work.
Exactly. Through productive activity, the slave develops a real sense of self-worth, independence, and a concrete understanding of reality that the master, lost in idle consumption, never achieves. It's an incredible insight into the dignity of work and the pitfalls of pure dominance.
That's powerful. Now, after this whole master-slave dynamic, consciousness doesn't just find peace. It goes through more internal struggles, stoicism, skepticism, eventually landing in what Hegel calls the unhappy consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
What's that state about?
It's a really crucial and quite relatable state. After trying to find freedom just within the individual mind, like the Stoics, or by negating external reality, like the skeptics, consciousness finds itself deeply divided.
Divided how?
It's aware of its own finite, flawed, changeable self, but it also has this intense longing for connection with something permanent, perfect, infinite, the absolute. But this absolute feels completely unattainable, alien, beyond.
So it's a feeling of alienation, estrangement.
Yes, profound alienation. A sense of being torn between the imperfect is and the perfect ought. It's unhappy because it can't bridge that gap on its own. And it's this deep dissatisfaction, this internal split that eventually pushes consciousness to look beyond the individual self.
To find itself in the collective.
Exactly. To seek reconciliation and fulfillment within the broader social world, within history, within culture. And that is the transition into the realm of spirit or Geist.
Okay, so spirit is reason playing out in the collective, in history. You mentioned he uses historical examples. Let's touch on ancient Greece again.
Right. He looks at the world of the Greek polis, what he calls the ethical order. It seems harmonious, right? A beautiful unity of individual and state, custom, and law.
Seems ideal.
But Hegel shows that this very harmony contained its own tragic conflict. Think of Sophocles' Antigone. You have the clash between divine law, the law of the family, represented by Antigone burying her brother, and human law, the law of the state, represented by King Creon forbidding it. The conflict wasn't external. It arose from within that ethical substance itself, showing its inherent instability and forcing history to move forward.
And then jumping forward, the French Revolution.
Yeah.
That was a huge one for him.
Absolutely massive. He saw it as this monumental attempt to remake society based purely on abstract reason and universal freedom. Get rid of all the old traditions, hierarchies, particulars.
Just pure rational freedom for all.
That was the idea. But what happened? It descended into the terror. Why? Because for Hegel, this abstract negative freedom, freedom from everything concrete, ended up just destroying everything, including itself. It showed the danger of reason divorced from lived reality, from ethical substance. Another painful lesson for spirit.
Wow. So this whole vast journey, what does it really mean for us today? What are the core themes we should take away from the phenomenology?
Okay, theme number one, definitely. The dialectic is the engine of progress. We're often taught to avoid conflict, seek compromise, find balance immediately. Hegel flips that.
Right.
He argues that contradiction, tension, conflict, these aren't problems to be solved away. They are the very source of growth, creativity, and deeper understanding. Progress happens because we grapple with opposing truths, not in spite of it.
So when you face a really tough dilemma, where both sides seem partly right, but totally opposed, that's actually a productive moment.
That's potentially a moment of Aufhebung in the making. It's forcing you towards a richer synthesis if you engage with the conflict honestly.
Okay, theme two. This feels incredibly current. The struggle for recognition.
Yes. The fundamental idea that our very sense of self, our identity, isn't something we just create in a vacuum. It's a social achievement. Self-consciousness exists only in being acknowledged, as he puts it somewhere.
So my identity depends on you recognizing me as a self, an equal.
In a deep way, yes. And this helps us understand why struggles for social justice, civil rights, equality, why they are so often framed as battles for recognition. It's about demanding that the dominant group or society as a whole acknowledges the full selfhood and dignity of a marginalized group.
That makes a lot of sense. Theme three, his idea of freedom as rational self-determination. This isn't just freedom means doing whatever I feel like.
Not at all. That's arbitrary choice, which Hegel saw as immature, even chaotic. For him, true, mature freedom comes from understanding the rational necessities of your world, the logic of your society, its ethical norms, its historical trajectory.
And then choosing to align yourself with that.
Willingly, yes. Consciously acting in accordance with that rational structure. It's freedom through integration into a rational community and its laws, not freedom from all constraints. It's much more demanding.
Definitely more complex. And the final big theme, maybe the overarching goal of the whole book, overcoming alienation and achieving reconciliation.
Right. That feeling of the unhappy consciousness of being a stranger in the world, estranged from your true potential or from the absolute. The whole journey of spirit through history is about overcoming that alienation.
To feel at home in the world.
Exactly. To reach a state where consciousness recognizes the world, nature, society, history, not as something alien and opposed, but as the manifestation of its own rational activity. Where the I feels reconciled with the we, and both feel at home in reality.
It's such a grand vision. To really feel the weight of these ideas, maybe we should touch on a few key phrases or concepts that capture his thought. They're often dense, but powerful.
Definitely. How about this one, which sums up his whole approach to truth? The true is the whole. The whole, however, is merely the essential nature wreaking its completeness through the process of its own development.
Okay, break that down. The true is the whole, but the whole is the process.
Yeah. Truth isn't just the final answer, the end result. It's the entire journey, the unfolding, the development itself. You can't just jump to the conclusion. You have to understand how consciousness got there. Through all the struggles and sublations, the journey is the truth.
I see. It emphasizes the dynamic nature of knowledge. What about the social aspect?
This one's brilliant for that. Spirit is the I that is we, and the we that is I.
Oh, that's neat. So the individual I only really becomes who they are through the collective we. Our culture, language, history shapes us entirely.
But at the same time,
the collective we doesn't exist as some abstract entity floating above us. It only lives and breathes through the actual consciousnesses of the individual I's who make it up.
Exactly. It's a perfect encapsulation of that mutual dependence.
And one more. Maybe going back to the master-slave struggle and the idea of freedom.
How about, it is solely by risking life that freedom is obtained.
That one has a real punch. It's saying freedom isn't just given, it's not our default state.
No, it has to be won. It requires demonstrating in a fundamental existential way that you value self-consciousness, recognition, freedom, more than just staying alive biologically. It underlines the seriousness and the active struggle involved in becoming truly free.
Okay, so we've journeyed through this incredibly complex landscape. How can we, you know, the listener today, actually apply some of this? Take this abstract map and use it.
Well, one way is to view the phenomenology almost as a guide for personal growth. Think about your own life. The moments of crisis, confusion, when your worldview was shattered, when you failed at something.
The painful bits.
The painful bits, Haeckel would say, those weren't just setbacks. Those were potentially moments of aufhebung. They were necessary contradictions forcing you to negate an older, less adequate version of yourself and develop a more complex, integrated, mature understanding. Don't run from the crisis. See it as fuel for growth.
That's a powerful reframe. What about in, say, work or leadership?
Oh, the master-slave dynamic is a timeless lesson there. Think about managers or leaders who rely purely on hierarchy and dominance, the master approach.
Yeah.
They might get compliance, sure, but it's often resentful, uninspired. It's hollow recognition. But leaders who empower their teams, who recognize their contributions, who value the slave's transformative work.
They build real loyalty.
They build loyalty, resilience, genuine engagement. Because people feel seen, recognized, and find meaning in their work, just like the slave finding self-worth through shaping the world.
I can also see it applying just to learning anything new and complex.
Absolutely. Real learning isn't just passively absorbing facts. That's like sense certainty, the naive stage.
Right.
True learning involves grappling with the material, encountering difficulties, realizing your initial understanding was flawed, the contradiction, wrestling with paradoxes, and then actively constructing a new, more sophisticated mental model that incorporates those earlier struggles. It's the journey from superficial grasp to deep conceptual understanding. The book itself models how to learn deeply.
It really does. It's like a workout for the mind.
Definitely.
So we've wrestled with Haeckel. We've navigated the phenomenology. As we wrap up, what's the one thing that really struck you this time or maybe surprised you revisiting it?
You know, it's the enduring power of that core idea, that conflict, negativity, contradiction. They aren't bugs in the system, they're features. They are the engine of progress. In a world that often seems desperate for easy answers and quick harmony, Hegel's insistence on the productive power of struggle, of working through difficulty, that feels more relevant than ever. It's challenging, but ultimately strangely hopeful.
Yeah, I get that. For me, what I really love is the underlying message of significance, maybe, that our individual consciousness, our collective history, it's not just random noise, it's part of this immense ongoing rational process.
The grand project of spirit knowing itself.
Exactly. It suggests that our struggles, our attempts to understand our participation in culture and society, they actually matter in this grand cosmic scheme. We're not just observers, we're active participants in reality figuring itself out. There's something deeply meaningful in that. So our final thought for you, the listener, to take away and chew on. The next time you encounter an idea, a perspective, maybe even a person that you instantly want to reject or negate, try pausing. Ask yourself, following Hegel, is there a partial truth here, even in this thing I oppose? Trusting that wrestling with that contradiction rather than just dismissing it might actually lead you to a richer, deeper understanding in the end. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akhatra Foundation.